The sun was hot, and halfway up the sky when Trock topped the hills above the oasis at the threshold of the wilderness. 200 chariots followed him in a column of fours. 5 miles further back, their dust cloud clearly visible in the bright sunlight, came Xander with another 200. Each vehicle carried 2 heavily armed troopers and was loaded with water skins and sheaths of spare javelins and arrows. Below them they saw the Assyrian trader coming up the slope from the well at the head of his caravan. Trock rode forward to meet him and hailed him from a distance.
"Well met, stranger. Whence come you, and what's your business?"
The trader looked up at this warlike host in trepidation, not certain what to expect. Trock's friendly greeting meant little. On the long road from Mesopotamia he had met robbers, bandits, and warlords. Trock reined in his chariot in front of him.
"I am His Divine Majesty, Pharaoh Trock Uruk. Welcome to the Lower Kingdom.
Fear not.
You are under my protection."
The trader fell to his knees and made his obeisance. For once Trock was impatient of the honours being paid to him, and he cut the man short.
"Stand and speak up, my brave fellow. If you're honest with me, and tell me what I need to know, I shall give you a license to trade throughout my kingdom free of any tax, and send 10 chariots to escort you to the gates of Avaris."
The merchant scrambled to his feet and began to express his deep gratitude, although he knew from long experience that such royal condescension was usually costly. Trock cut him short.
"I'm in pursuit of a band of criminal fugitives. Have you seen them?"
"I've met a number of travellers along the way," the Assyrian replied cautiously. "Would your divine majesty deign to describe these villains to me, and I will do my best to place you upon their tracks?"
"Probably 5 or 6 in number. They'll be heading towards the east, one young woman with them, the rest of them men. The leader's an ancient rogue, tall and thin. He may have dyed his hair black or brown."
Trock got no further with his description before the Assyrian broke in excitedly.
"Your Majesty, I know them well. Some days ago the old man, with dyed hair, purchased carpets and old clothing from me. At that time the woman was not with them. He left horses and 3 chariots at the oasis down yonder, in charge of an ugly black ruffian. With the others in an old wagon loaded with the carpets I'd sold him, he took this high road that we are now standing on, towards Avaris."
Trock grinned triumphantly. "That's the one I want. Have you seen him since? Did he return to pick up the chariots?"
"He and the other 3 came back early this morning on foot from the direction of Avaris. With them was the young woman you asked after. She seemed to be injured in some way, for they carried her."
"Where are they gone, Pharaoh? Which way?"
Trock demanded eagerly. But the Assyrian would not be hurried.
"The woman was young, though she was injured and could only walk with difficulty. She wore fine cloth. She was clearly of high rank and beautiful, with long dark hair."
"Enough of that. I know the woman well enough without your description. After they left the oasis, which way did they go?"
"They harnessed the horses to the 3 chariots and left immediately."
"Which way, man? Which direction did they take?"
"East, along the caravan road."
He pointed out the winding track that climbed the low hills into the dune country.
"But the old man's hair was no longer dyed. When I last saw him, it shone like a cloud in the summer sky."
"When did they leave?"
"An hour after sunrise, Majesty."
"What was the condition of their horses?"
"Well watered and rested. They had been lying up at the oasis for 3 days, and they brought a load of fodder with them when they arrived. When they left this morning, their water skins were filled at the well, and they seemed to be provisioned for the long journey to the sea."
"Then they're only hours ahead of us," Trock exulted. "Well done, fellow. You've earned my gratitude. My scribes will issue you with a license to trade, and Colonel Tolmer will assign you an escort to Avaris. You'll be further rewarded when I return to the city with the fugitives in bonds."
You shall have a fine seat in the front row of spectators at their execution.
Until then, I wish you a good journey, and much profit in my kingdom.
He turned from him and began issuing orders to Colonel Tolmer, who followed him closely in the second chariot of the column.
Give this fellow a trade license and an escort to Avaris. Top up the waterskins at the well. Let the horses drink their fill. But swiftly, Tolmer, be ready to leave again before noon. In the meantime, send your wizards and the regimental priests to me.
The troopers took the horses down to the well in batches of 20 at a time to drink. The men who were not busy with this work stretched out in the shade thrown by their own vehicles to rest and eat a frugal meal of millet bread and dried meat, the staple diet of the cavalry. Trock found a patch of shade under a gnarled tamarind near the well. The wizards and holy men came in response to his summons and squatted in a circle around him. There were four of them, two shaven priests of Suath in their black robes, a Nubian shaman hung with necklaces and bracelets of charms and bones, and a sorcerer from the east known as Ishtar the Mede. Ishtar had one wall eye, and his face was tattooed with purple and red whorls and circles.
"The man we're pursuing is an adept of the occult arts," Trock warned them. "He'll exert all his powers to frustrate us. It's said that he can weave a spell of concealment, and that he can conjure up images that might dismay our legions. You'll have to work your own spells to turn aside his powers."
"Who is this charlatan?" asked Ishtar the Mede. "You can be certain that he will not prevail against our combined force."
"His name is Taita," Trock replied,
and only Ishtar showed no dismay at the identity of their adversary.
"I know Taita only by reputation," he said, "but I have long looked for an opportunity to match him."
"Weave your magic," Trock ordered them.
The priests of Suath went aside a short distance and laid out their accoutrements and mystical trappings on the sand. They began to chant softly and shake their rattles over them. The Nubian searched among the rocks around the well until he found a venomous horned adder under one of them. He lopped off its head and dribbled the blood over his own head. With it running down his cheeks and dripping off the tip of his nose, he hopped in circles like a great black toad. As he completed each turn, he spat copiously towards the east where Taita lay. Ishtar built a small fire near the well and squatted over it, rocking on his heels and muttering incantations to Marduk, the most powerful of all the 2,010 gods of Mesopotamia. Once he'd given his orders to Tolmer, Trock went across to watch him at work.
"What magic are you making here?" he asked at last,
as Ishtar opened a vein in his wrist and let a few drops of his own blood drip and sizzle in the flames of the fire.
"This is a hex of fire and blood. I am placing obstacles and hardships in Taita's path."
Ishtar did not look up.
"I am confusing and confounding the minds of his followers."
Trock grunted skeptically, but secretly he was impressed. He'd seen Ishtar work before. He walked a short way along the road and glared at the line of eastern hills. He was hot for the pursuit and grudged this stay. On the other hand, he was enough of a general to realize the absolute necessity of resting and watering the horse after the long night ride. He knew well the nature of the ground ahead. As a young captain of chariots, he'd patrolled there on many occasions. He'd crossed the shale beds that cut hooves and hocks like flint knives, and had endured the terrible heat and thirst of the dunes. He walked back to where he'd left his chariot, but he had to pause and turn his back as a sudden dust devil came swirling across the yellow plain, spinning upon itself and rising several hundred cubits into the sultry air. The vortex encompassed him. The air was as hot as the breath from a bronze furnace, and he had to cover his nose and eyes with his headcloth and breathe through the material to strain out the flying sand. It swept past and spun away across the hot earth with the grace of a harem dancer, leaving him coughing and wiping his eyes. It was a little before noon, and they'd just finished watering, when the second column under Colonel Zander caught up with them and came down the slope to the well. They were as much in need of water as the first column, and now there was danger of congestion at the oasis. Already the water was depleted and muddied. They'd be forced to fall back on the precious water skins to eke out the supply. Trock held a brief conference with Zander and Tolma, explaining his plan of action and the formation he wanted to employ to prevent Taita from twisting and turning out of the net they were spreading for him. "Warn the regimental commanders to be on the alert for any magical snares that Taita puts out to confuse us," he ended. "Ishtar the Mede has worked a potent spell. I have much faith in him. He's never failed me before. If we're fully aware of the wiles of the warlock, we'll succeed. After all, how can he prevail against such an array?" With a sweep of his arm, he indicated the huge gathering of chariots and horses and elite troops. "Now, by the breath of Sueth, this time tomorrow I'll be dragging Taita and Mintaka behind my chariot on the way back to Avaris." He ordered the leading column to mount. Four chariots abreast, and in a column half a league long, they headed out into the wilderness. On the soft, sandy earth ahead, the wheel tracks of their quarry were clearly etched.